News Radio 930 WBEN. It's Tom Bowerly and David Bellavia. It's Bowerly and Bellavia on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Welcome. It is Bowerly on a Wednesday afternoon, midweek. It's hump day. We get through today and it is smooth sailing until the weekend here on News Radio 930 WBEN. Oh, Phil, I was occupied, so I didn't happen to catch the cash code word for 3 o'clock. So if you'll write it down, I will pass it on to our listeners because I'm bound and determined. But being bound has a totally different meaning in 2020 than it used to have. Bound and determined to have another winner on the program. And the word is, are you ready? All right. The word is beat. B-E-A-T. Yeah, exactly. I want to use that in a sentence, but I don't think they're going to let me use it in the sentence I would come up with. So I will say, let's see. Alicia Keys has music with a magnificent beat, B-E-A-T. And yeah, that's the cash code word. And you can text it to 72881, 72881 for your chance to win $1,000 from News Radio 930 WBEN. And I will repeat it a few times during the course of the hour because that is living audible proof of my dedication to getting as many winners as possible on this program. Speaking of winners, anybody else spend the last hour or so listening to Adam Schiff? OMG. The man is not exactly a riveting speaker. You know, if I was a juror in a courtroom, fat chance of that ever happening, but if I was a juror in a courtroom and I had to listen to this guy drone and drone and drone, complete, by the way, with sound bites, I would have a hard time, I think, staying awake. It's kind of like watching Adam Schiff. I don't know how many of you do this, but it's kind of like reading before you go to sleep at night. And you know that part where if you're on your back and you're holding the book and you start to doze off and the book falls on the floor and then you realize, oh, I should probably go to sleep now. That's how I felt the past 45 minutes with Adam Schiff. And Rush pointed this out, but they're bringing stuff up. Schiff is bringing things up that, as nearly as I can determine, have absolutely nothing to do with the engrossed articles of impeachment signed by Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, last week. So I don't know. I don't know what power the Chief Justice, who is presiding over this trial, has to say, you know, stick to the matter at hand. Stick to the facts, Jack. But so far, it's almost like anybody else have the feeling that it is a general and broadly sweeping attempt to condemn the entirety of President Trump's term in office so far? Question mark, question mark, question mark. So obviously, we have that going on nationally. I'm going to get into some more detail as we move along on WBEN. And there's also something going on locally, and to nobody's surprise, the controller of Erie County, Stefan Mihailu, has thrown his hat into the ring for NY27. And here's what I'm thinking. You've got Rob Ort, Beth Parlato, and Stefan Mihailu now. And they're all going to try to out-Trump each other. They're all going to say that they are the single best ally President Trump could possibly have from NY27 sitting in the House of Representatives. And then you've got Chris Jacobs. Why do I get the feeling that between Mihailu, Parlato, and Ort, that they will basically defeat each other, paving the way for Chris Jacobs to get the nomination and become the candidate in NY27. Because as near as I can figure out, the candidates who are announced for NY27, it seems to me as though they're all basically the same person. They all basically stand for the same stuff. And it's almost like a popularity contest. Who can generate the votes? And if you've got three people who are more or less espousing the same stuff, what is likely to happen? Isn't it likely that they're simply going to split the vote between themselves? And then Chris Jacobs ends up and emerges as the candidate of the GOP? Stranger things have happened, but at some point, I don't know exactly how involved the various county chairman or Nick Langworthy is involved or is going to be involved in this whole process, but at some point, I would think that the political brains have got to sit back and wonder exactly how this is likely to play out and what the ramifications of this will be. And, you know, we've seen in our lifetimes, Bill Clinton, anybody? We've seen in our lifetimes situations where just a third candidate in a presidential election has made the difference between success and failure for a candidate. George Herbert Walker Bush, defeated by William Jefferson Clinton, in part because there was a third candidate who was appealing to a lot of people. He was almost like Donald Trump before Donald Trump was Donald Trump in 2016. So that, I think, is something worth keeping an eye on. I mean, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But it seems to me like the single biggest campaign issue for Beth Parlato and Stefan Mihailu and Rob Ort is the fact that they are eternally loyal to President Trump. So it's like eeny, meeny, miny. For whom do you cast a vote? And interestingly, Chris Jacobs has not aired any ads pledging eternal fealty to Donald Trump or the administration. And, you know, if you've got three people basically saying the same stuff and one person who isn't, what is most likely to happen in a situation like that? In a way, it's kind of interesting because I think you've got at least three strong candidates in the Republican race in NY27. Maybe one of them should say, maybe it's time to challenge Brian Higgins. Now, granted, that is a tough thing to do. But my friend Rene Zeno got, I believe, about 35% of the vote when she ran against Brian Higgins, and basically she was an outsider and a no-name. So if Brian Higgins was challenged by somebody with a name, somebody who is intimately acquainted with all the nuances of campaigning and how to win an election, who knows what might happen? Stranger things have taken place. Anybody remember when George Pataki defeated Mario Cuomo, the sainted one, all those years ago? Well, he wasn't supposed to do that. And at this point, the demographics of the state are such that that kind of an upset will likely never happen again. But I am a little bit concerned about three candidates on the Republican side in NY27 basically defeating each other. And the more candidates who announce, who basically say the same stuff, the more split the pro-Trump vote is going to be in the Republican primary, thus paving the way for somebody whose Trump credentials, I think, at the very least, are questionable. It is 17 minutes after 3 at News Radio 930 WBEN. I cannot believe, I literally cannot believe all the shows I have done lately on politics. It never ceases to amaze me. But I know at the same time that there are a number of folks probably sitting at home who are missing their favorite afternoon TV shows. And as I said yesterday, I remember, and maybe you do too, growing up, being a little kid, and something would happen in the news, and all of the three, at that time, major broadcast networks would carry it. I remember the grown-ups, and maybe you do, saying, wow, couldn't they just decide on one station to carry it today, and then another station carries it the next day, and so on and so forth? But that's one aspect to it. The other aspect that, I don't know, it's fun to pay attention to, is at what time the wall-to-wall coverage on the local affiliates and on the networks, at what time it ceases to be important. Because they go wall to wall for how many hours? And then yesterday, one of the stations broke away at 3 o'clock, and one or two broke away at 4 o'clock. Same story, same issues being discussed, but different considerations enter into the equation, like your local news as a revenue stream, like your primetime shows as a revenue stream. Because in the final analysis, it's always about the money button. It's always about the bottom line. And I don't know. It's just an overall comment on something that makes me laugh just a little bit. This story is so important. My goodness, it is vital that our viewers have access to every single word of every single speaker until 3 o'clock, and then we're going to bail. Until 4 o'clock, and then we're going to bail. I don't know. It strikes me as being a little bit awkward. I mean, can you imagine breaking away from 9/11 coverage? Obviously, they're two different stories, duh, I get that, but that was a breaking news situation where people were craving every bit of information they could possibly get, but the future of the country, I think, is pretty important, but it's only important until 3 o'clock or until 4 o'clock, whatever the case may be. So, in my continuing quest to try to keep this as interesting as I can for you, I've got a few questions that I would like to plunge into, including one that I kind of brought up in the last hour yesterday, and people were dying to get on the air to talk about it. And basically, by the end of the show, as will often happen at the end of the show, your buddy ran out of time. But this was actually in an email I received from, the Independent Women's Law Center, which is allegedly a conservative group. And I say allegedly because, as near as I can figure out with my internet searches, that seems to be generally from where they are coming. There are some groups that sound, that have similar titles, but they have a different announced orientation. But the thesis of this piece is, I'll boil it down to you real quickly before I get into the specifics of what was written that appeared originally on The Hill. But the thesis goes this way, that if you are a conservative, and I think that means if you support President Trump, do not fall into the trap of making this legal process as short as possible. Do not fall into the trap of not having as full and as comprehensive a trial as you can possibly have. That is a strategic mistake. Now, before I get any further in boiling down what they're writing about here, I must tell you that my initial inclination when looking at the impeachment trial itself in the Senate, my initial inclination was, you know what? I don't think there's anything to hide here. I don't think there is a convictable case here. So why not let this thing play out in much the same way as the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings played out? You remember that? I'm sure you remember that because you remember all of the controversy when that senator was stopped in the elevator and then committed to delaying the vote on the person who would become Associate Justice Kavanaugh until after additional information on his background was obtained. And I remember at the time, there was a lot of anger on the right that the vote on Kavanaugh was going to be delayed so additional information could come out. But in the longer term, what really happened with that? The left's case fell apart. There wasn't anything there. There was no there there. And one might say that that strategy by the Democrats and the left to derail the nomination of the person who would become Associate Justice Kavanaugh kind of blew up in their faces. So there are times when we might think we want something to be done as fast as possible, but in the long run and strategically, it might make more sense to stretch this thing out. So my initial inclination was, let's get this thing, my initial inclination was, you know what? They want a trial, give them a trial. Call in as many witnesses as you want. Make sure that the public sees that the Republicans are not sweeping this trial under the rug. They're not simply a kangaroo court. This is really a fair process, and the American people have the transparency they deserve. That was my initial thought. Now, a bunch of people called in, and they said, wait a minute, if you have the votes to acquit the president, make this situation go away as quickly as possible so that all efforts could be put onto 2020. That there's no there there. We all know how this thing is going to end up. Therefore, let's dispense with this as quickly as possible. And the bottom line with those folks who called in was, why take a risk? Why venture into territory where you don't know where that territory is going to lead? And I remember at the time,
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Citing the example of O.J. Simpson prosecutor Christopher Darden, who asked a question to which he did not know the answer, and it was one of the most dramatic moments in the trial of O.J. Simpson criminally, leading to Johnny Cochran saying, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit, because O.J.'s hand did not fit into that glove. Because he was wearing a rubber glove on top of it, in all likelihood. But that visual backfired on the prosecution in that case, because Mr. Darden went into territory where he didn't know how it was going to work out. So there is some concern among the Trumpists that by allowing a number of witnesses to come forward and by protracting this in the passage of time, that it is a risk that ought not to be taken. But this piece that I'm going to get into summarizes, I think, the reasons why my initial analysis of the situation, I think, was the way to go. That there are very good reasons for the trial in the Senate of Donald Trump to be as comprehensive and all-encompassing as possible. In the longer term, I should have gone with my gut, definitively. In the longer term, I think strategically, it makes the most sense. And we're going to get into that coming up after the news at 3:30. Now, we did talk about this a little bit yesterday, but I think it is worthy of talking about some more. And I've also got some other stuff that's a little bit fresher to whip out, nothing like a moldy avocado. The phone number to get on the air, by the way, Adam Schiff is still talking. So beat it. Just beat it. You better run. Anyway, it is Bowerly with you on a Wednesday on News Radio 930 WBEN. And it's kind of funny because during the commercial break there in the news, I had my article that was all set to go. Ah, here it is. It's all set to go. And I want to share it with you. Of course, the person who wrote it responded to me just as I clicked the microphone button on for the segment, so I can't read what she wrote. But I want you to listen up. And as I said prior to the break, does this make sense to you? Because this was my initial feeling that some of you people almost talked me out of. But here we go. President Trump has tweeted that allowing a full-blown impeachment trial would lend legitimacy to an unfair and partisan process. Numerous conservative pundits have pushed for outright dismissal or the briefest of proceedings. The Kavanaugh hearings, in which the left overstepped and inadvertently mobilized an army of conservative voters, educated the public about how the court has become politicized and filled initially sympathetic women with concern about due process and the implications of the believe all accusers standard. A Senate impeachment trial is both an opportunity conservatives should embrace and a firecracker the left should fear. Okay, here is a money quote. Smart operatives on the left have understood from the beginning that this impeachment case will not result in the removal from office of President Trump. Instead, it's a form of political theater, an opening argument in the 2020 presidential campaign and in the campaign to control the Senate. Here's another money quote. By making the process seem predetermined and thus insincere, they seek to embarrass and tar vulnerable Republican senators. Hence, the push for an unlimited number of witnesses, an attempt to force GOP senators to cast votes their Democratic challengers can use against them on the campaign trail. Now, Mitch McConnell knows all this, and Senate Republicans have been able to thread that needle, rejecting the idea of summarily dismissing articles of impeachment, but also waiting to make decisions about witnesses until the evidence requires it. They plan to move forward with a trial complete with arguments and possible witness testimony. The president, here's another money quote, the president should welcome this approach, and conservative pundits should stop trying to secure a commitment not to call any witnesses at all, something that, as far as moderates and swing voters are concerned, can only reasonably be determined on a case-by-case basis. And again, here is an important component of this whole piece for swing voters, not swinger voters, but for swing voters, fairness will be essential. Supporters of the president may firmly believe that hearings with witness testimony will legitimize a thin and baseless case. But the critical swing constituency is watching to see if the Senate handles the matter fairly and without bias. No word on what the big band voters have to say. But a transparent, that was not in the original piece, a transparent and deliberative process where decisions about subpoenas and testimony are determined as needed will allow Americans to hear the best arguments that each side can muster. It also provides an essential opportunity for Republicans to demonstrate, as they did during the Kavanaugh hearings, that it is they, not the Democrats, who are the guardians of due process and concerned with what is fair. After months of one-sided spin from the mainstream media, a trial will provide Americans their first full opportunity to consider the evidence and come to their conclusions about these matters and the worthiness of the impeachment process, the impeachment effort. Full impeachment hearings will likely reveal that much of the Democrats' concerns boil down to just such differences and a consequent attempt to circumvent resolution by election. A full exposition and defense on not only the merits of the charges, but whether impeachment is the appropriate remedy and the precedent that all of this sets deserve to be fully fleshed out before the public. And the piece also states, our founders warned against using impeachment to resolve policy and political disagreements. That is what elections are for. Well, I'm hard-pressed to come up with a solid argument against what was written. Now, this was on The Hill, and it was actually sent to me by a group called Independent Women's Voice. Now, why are we so worried, or why should we be so concerned about the independent so-called voters? Well, let me try to explain this. Not that hard a concept, actually. It's pretty easy. Back in October of 2017, and I know how dubious you are, and with very good reasons, about polls. We have seen one or two polls inaccurately reflect the mood of the public. But for what it's worth, back in October of 2017, Gallup asked about people's political orientation, which, by the way, I'm going to be doing as well. 31% in this Gallup poll a couple of years ago, 31% of Americans identified as Democrats, 24% as Republicans, but 42% said they were independent. But one of the things that I need to stress, we talked about just the other day, there are independent voters and there are independent voters. I'm an independent voter, all right? I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I am not affiliated with either of the major or, for that matter, any political party. I'm an independent voter. But I tend, but not always, I tend to vote along the Republican or conservative line. So technically, I would have to identify myself as an independent voter. But just like you, if you're independent, you have certain traits and characteristics as a voter that are evidenced election after election. You know, I tend to vote for candidates who are more on the right, and there are independent voters who vote for candidates who are more on the left. So you might say you're independent, but that kind of, you know what, it implies a tabula rasa that isn't there. It is not a clean slate. We all have our biases, and we all have the ways in which we are likely to vote. Now, why is this important? Why even bring it up? Because back in 2016, in the election of President Trump, independent voters by 7% favored President Trump, according to some research. Independent voters went Republican by a margin of 7%. Now, in a tight election in which Hillary Clinton supposedly won the popular vote while Donald Trump won the electoral vote, 7% is significant. You know, you think about the election of 1960, John F. Kennedy against Richard Nixon, and that was a real touch-and-go thing. That was a very, very close election. Think about 2000 and the whole Bush-Gore and hanging chads thing. 7% is important. So I think that an argument can be made, and I think a good argument, that however inconvenient it might be, however many soap operas or whatever else you watch on the broadcast networks are impacted, that it is important for the Republicans, especially in the Senate, to be able to position themselves as being fair, being able to position themselves as individuals who, when they took the oath and signed the oath to be impartial, actually meant it. And also, I think for the Republicans, if they are convinced that there is no there, that there are no crimes that have been committed by President Trump, and certainly nothing that rises to the level of a high crime or a misdemeanor, that the longer it goes with the more witnesses, much like the Kavanaugh situation, it may very well blow up in the Democrats' faces. And I'm speaking metaphorically. I don't want anybody to be blown up physically. That would be stupid. So having listened to this, and I did get into this a little bit yesterday in the 5 o'clock hour, but do you see the wisdom in basically taking this case as long as it needs to be taken, obviously within reason, okay? I mean, we're probably talking about the difference between roughly 3 weeks and perhaps 8 weeks at the outside. Of course, you never know, because you never know what's going to come up, and you never know if somebody's going to be called as a rebuttal witness or whatever, but I would guesstimate, and that's what it is, a guesstimation, that 8 weeks would be the outside in terms of a how long would this whole process take. And the other thing, too, thinking devilishly and schemishly, not squeamishly, but schemishly, is the longer these Democrat senators are listening to the impeachment argument, what aren't some of them actually doing? So as this hour kind of ticks away, I want you to consider of my speech, consider of this piece from which I read just a few minutes ago. And yeah, we talked about it yesterday, and it certainly has come up before. But I am very interested in knowing if you agree that because of the vapidity, is that a word? The vapidity, it is now, I just made it up if it's not, of the Democrats' case, or what I perceive as the vapid nature of the Democrats' case, do you believe that for many reasons it makes sense to have as many witnesses as the Democrats want? Basically, hit us with your best shot. Our side will demolish the argument. We will demolish what is being said. And you can expose your venom and the intent behind the articles of impeachment and therefore this entire trial when we see what a lame case you have tried to make political hay out of here in the United States Senate. Now, one of the issues is John Bolton, the former national security advisor for President Trump. And is he going to testify? President Trump earlier has said that he'd like to hear and see the witnesses. I mean, he kind of goes back and forth on that, but that Bolton might be off limits because he was the national security advisor. Well, I don't know if there's a way to get somebody to testify at a Senate impeachment trial while also having stipulations which would govern that testimony in terms of areas that could be gone into and areas that could not. I don't know, for example, if Justice Roberts and the Trump defense people and the prosecutors would be able to have some kind of a behind-the-scenes, in-chambers meeting to delineate the areas that may be asked about and may not be asked about because they don't want to blow anything as far as national security. So I'm not sure about that. And the other thing that I would find personally interesting is, where do you find yourself on this big political continuum? And I don't have time to fully explain what I mean by that, but I will coming up after the news at 4. So those are the basics for right now.